Chapter 56. The Saviour of All. Maywen permitted them little rest, awakening the company long before dawn and spurring them to pack more quickly. For the first time in her life, the Shalane shouldered her own burden, despite numerous offers to relieve her of it. She felt the need to prove she could stand on her own legs, and the virtue of Jen's training stones infused her with an unusual vigour and a confidence in her own strength. Samian had started his instruction immediately after Maywen had returned the stones, and the Shalane already felt she could buckle, draw, and resheathe a sword with her eyes closed and hopping on one leg. While she had no pretensions that she would ever acquire the skill of Dacen or Jen, she took a smug satisfaction in knowing more of the sword than her husband. "Gather to me quickly," Maywen ordered. "I have argued with myself all night about which course to take, and I choose the riskier one in terms of the way, but safer in terms of Uyumak. I am going to take you over the mountains and hopefully into the Dunnock River Valley, and from thence across the plain to the lake. The wind and water in the mountains will hinder our enemy's sense of smell, and without a wide plain it will be difficult for them to come at us in numbers or use their archers effectively. The dangers, of course, are the weather and the raw wilderness we must traverse. I will be plain. There is no trail. I have never travelled this way before the Shattering or after. It will be cold and arduous, and a misstep in the wild can be deadly. If anyone sprains an ankle or breaks a leg, they will be left behind. Shatan and the Shalane accepted, of course. If any feel to disagree, do so now. But this is the course I think best." "What is the other option?" the Haulrik asked grumpily. "The other way is to travel along the edge of the foothills, but stay on the plain. The way is longer, but the travel would be faster. We would also be more visible, and the Uyumak able to approach us with superior numbers." After no one voiced any objections, Maywen removed her two knives from their sheaths. "We will be travelling in the dark and fog for the next few hours. If you have a weapon, keep it at the ready. Your vision will do you little good, and you must rely on your other senses to keep you safe. The Shalane, Shatan, Mirel, Fenner, and Jeff walk in the centre of the party. I will lead, and Dacen bring up the rear. Walk close together and raise a quiet shout if you are separated. Let's get into the mountains." They left the ringed hill through the same opening they had entered, turning west and plunging into an almost impossible dark. The Shalane followed Shatan more by sound than sight, her husband's stumbling and cursing warning her of obstacles in the path. By the time the first hint of light blushed the sky, she doubted they had covered a mile. The putrid stench of throgs sometimes invaded their nostrils, but quickly faded, inciting muffled curses. The Shalane drove out thoughts of snaky tubules launching from the dark to leech blood from her leg, but images of Jeff, pale on the ground, stoked her fears until morning flooded the sky. For the next several days they climbed steadily and slowly, and despite Maywen's ample skill, they found themselves backtracking to find better routes or alternatives to dead ends. Only the foul reek of the throgs and the intermittent appearance of a yellow eye just out of bowshot bespoke the enemy's presence. Maywen's analysis, as usual, left little opportunity for hope or comfort. "The Uyumak likely know the mountains better than we. It could be they have elements ahead, and are content to let us stumble along until we encounter one of their fortifications." To the Shalane's satisfaction and relief, after Jeff's near-fatal encounter with a Throg, Fenner had doted on the dispirited bard, seeing to his comfort and cheering him with light conversation and little compliments. Both she and her husband tired quickly, breathing heavily and trudging slowly at the slightest incline, and as Maywen led them deeper into the mountains, the grade of their path increased in steepness and difficulty. Whatever their struggles, no one huffed and blew or complained more than the sunburned Haulrik, who found opportunity to curse nearly everything on the trail when he wasn't busy sucking wind. His comments ranged from the annoying to the ridiculous.
"I swear, it's as if someone placed these rocks here for me to trip on. I thought this was the top. Surely Mikik created these bugs. I think moving more slowly is in order, for everyone's safety, this reckless sprint into the mountains is folly enough as it is."
Maywin eventually gave up trying to convince the Ha'ulric to keep quiet, though Shertan's complaints gradually subsided into barely vocalized mumbling. For her part, the Shalane found little difficulty in their ascent, thanking Jen for the stones she knew imbued her with a greater fortitude than most of her party. She used what surplus of strength she had to aid her mother, who, while uncomplaining, wore her exhaustion openly in spite of every attempt to hide it. Cadean appeared ready to carry her at any moment, and between his help and her daughter's, Meirel kept pace. As Maywin promised, the nights in the mountains chilled them almost beyond toleration. As a concession, she allowed fires, saying that the Throgs ensured that the Uyumak knew of their whereabouts, fire or no, though she chose camps that would keep archers from using the light to pick at them in the dark. Jeff spent the evenings writing in his book. Fenner snuggled next to him. The Shalane huddled with her mother, and Dayson always sat uncomfortably close on the other side of her, whispering compliments and hopeful prognostications, however lightly the Shalane treated them. A full week into the mountains, they hiked through a lightly forested ridge just below the snow line.
"We should have an easier time of it now," Maywin comforted them. "We will descend as directly as we can toward the Dunnock." "I cannot see the river," Shertan said, peering into the valley below them.
"It is at least two ridges over, perhaps three," Maywin explained. "We aren't done ascending completely." Shertan's face fell.
"At least the weather is holding."
"It isn't," Maywin contradicted.
"What do you mean?"
Aethon inquired.
"Look to the northeast,"
the half-elf invited them, casually whittling at a new arrow. "There is a slight haze at the trailing edge of a storm. Didn't you feel the wind change?"
"Will it be bad?"
Aethon prodded.
"Yes, but brief as well. We will need better shelter than we have found previously."
"And when were you planning on informing us about this storm?"
Shertan grumped.
"I figured it would become rather obvious to you in a few hours."
"I am the leader of the caravan," Shertan asserted. "Please inform me immediately of any changes of this kind."
"As you wish. You may also want to know that a company of Uyumak will likely overtake us by nightfall, probably around the same time as the storm." "What do you command?"
Shotan's eyes widened and then darted about.
"What do you suggest?"
"I suggest we find better shelter than we have found previously, by which I mean more defensible to weather and enemies."
"Make it so,"
Shotan commanded lamely. Maywin brushed the wood shavings from her legs and sheathed her knife.
"Let's march."
As early afternoon set in, Maywin's predictions came true. A dark mass of cold grey clouds sped across the sky directly toward them, and for the first time in days, they heard the percussive thumping of the Uyumak. More disconcerting was the troubled, frustrated look on Maywin's face. Increasingly, she ordered halts as she wandered about in search of some place to hole up for the night, returning with a scowl. As evening fell, the wind rose in gusts, and the clouds threw a blanket across the sun.
"Stay here," Maywin commanded, running ahead and returning after several minutes. "I have found a cave just ahead. If we hurry, we can reach it before the weather turns dangerous."
They descended down the ridge a bit farther before the Shalane could spot the cave through her obscuring veil. A wall of brown rock ran along a steep incline to their right. Between the sparse but ancient trees, the Shalane could just make out a dark hole worn into the rock face by water and wind. The ascent took effort and time, shards of loose rock beguiling their feet and sending nearly everyone to all fours to keep from slipping down the hill. By the time they reached the base of the rock wall, the storm whipped snowflakes around their faces with fury. The entrance to the cave rose shoulder high and stretched several feet wide, the bulk of the cave lying below the entrance after a slight descent. The interior, to their amazement, was quite commodious, and the change from cold exposure to relative warmth and protection prompted a wave of relief.
"Won't the Uyumak trap us in here?" Aethon asked worriedly.
"Unlikely," Maywin answered. "If you didn't notice, we haven't heard them speaking for nearly 2 hours. If there is a brain among them, they are doing what we are right now. We will leave as soon as we can to keep the advantage of distance, though the difficult approach to the cave and the cover of the trees actually make this an excellent place to stand if needed.
Can we light a fire?
Shaitan asked. A small one, but we have no wood, Maywan answered. I doubt anyone wants to retrieve any.
You too,
Shaitan ordered two of his personal guards.
Fetch us firewood.
Yes, Ha'orik.
By the time they returned, they shook with cold and carried a paltry amount of wood and tinder.
Is that all you could find?
Shaitan complained, displeased.
Forgive us, Lord Cairn,
they begged,
but that is all we could gather before our hands were too numb to gather more.
Warm your hands and return for more.
It required three trips before the obedient soldiers gathered enough fuel for the fire to satisfy their lord. Once the small flame sprang to life, the Shalane invited them to enjoy its warmth first, for which they thanked her. While the smoke rose gradually out of the hole, the cave filled with a smoky haze that burned their eyes. The relaxing warmth far outweighed these inconveniences, and soon they all lay back against the cave walls and listened to the wind howl outside.
If we had some meat, I would almost be content, Shaitan announced.
His two soldiers cast terrified looks at each other, but to their relief their lord did not command them out into the bitter dark in search of game. The Shalane regarded her husband, wondering at his new-found assertiveness. Aethan sat nearby, lost in thought, face careworn and drawn. The Shalane could not like the man, but she could appreciate the burden he had shouldered. Counseling and shaping Shaitan was a daunting task, as doomed, she thought, as the foolish potter who threw a slab of granite on his wheel only to find his hands worn away well before the stone. Night fell completely some while later, driven snow spraying into the cave when the wind kicked up. A scrabbling outside pulled them from their pleasant rest, setting everyone at edge. Weapons quietly slid from discarded sheaths as the sound persisted, nearing. Something ascended the incline toward their camp, disturbing the gravel and rocks on the hill. Breathing shallowed and eyes sharpened, all attention riveted on the opening to the cave just above them. The scrabbling stopped, and several tense moments passed, imaginations spawning everything from a stray deer to an Uyumark hunter in the cave entrance. The Shalane, hearing muttering nearby, turned toward the sound, finding Aethan incanting something under his breath. At first she thought he might be warding the cave against entry, but as she watched, Shaitan, who hugged the cave wall, face pale, grew more composed, colour returning. A bold determination took hold of his features, and he scooted toward the edge of the cave where Maywan, Tolbrook and Jaren awaited in readiness. Slowly, the sickly yellow eye of a throg drifted in, facing the cave wall. As it rotated downward, Maywan switched her knives to a throwing grip. But before she could launch her attack, the glistening eye fell from the sky as if the invisible force that infused it with buoyancy and motion had suddenly dropped it. It clanked once as it hit the rocks, its second bounce shattering it like glass, little shards clinking as they descended to the floor. Shaitan, face exultant, sunk to the ground exhausted.
I did it, he said quietly. I changed it to glass. Did you see, Aethan?
Well done, Lord Cairn,
Aethan congratulated him heartily.
You see, I told you we would have need of your power before this journey is over. Do you see what you can accomplish?
Yes, but I am so tired.
It is often so with new magicians, my lord. The ability to use magic is like a muscle that strengthens as it is used. You will grow in ability day by day and will soon have the ability to change 20 such eyes without so much as a thought.
The Shalane found her mother casting her a meaningful glance. The Shalane rolled her eyes up into her head and quietly exhaled.
That was well done, Shaitan, she said as sincerely as possible. Such use of your power is exactly what we need in our dire circumstances.
To her surprise, Shaitan's brow furrowed.
I do not need you to tell me what is needed, he rejoined testily. I have a mind about me.
She wished to compliment you, Your Highness, Aethan interjected, trying to recover the glow of the moment.
Compliments and scorn are what women use to shape men into what they want them to be. I will achieve greatness, and I will do it without anyone's assistance or interference.
Then how am I to express appreciation or gratitude? If I say nothing, then you might think me insensible or uncaring of your accomplishments. The Shalane tried to say this as meekly as possible, but from Shatan's expression, it appeared the obvious frustration in her voice had revealed her artifice.
Your mistake, Lady Cairn, is assuming that I need your appreciation or your gratitude. I do not. Therefore, I will view any such expressions as useless or as distasteful attempts to manipulate me.
As you wish, the Shalane returned, inclining her head, noticing Mirel staring Jaren away from his sword hilt. The Shalane felt annoyed at Shatan's arrogant independence, though she viewed Shatan's insistence that she never compliment him as an unintended act of beneficence that would preclude her from actually needing to vocalize several lies she had at hand to get her through her marriage.
"Let us rest now, Highness," Aethon encouraged his charge. "Mikik's servant is blinded, and we will all rest more easily now."
Shatan returned to his place near the fire and immediately dozed off. The Shalane lay awake for nearly an hour, watching her companions drift off one by one. Fenna lay asleep, her head on Jeff's shoulder and her arm on his chest, and the Shalane smiled, remembering the night in the canyon when she slept in just the same fashion with Jen. By now, her addiction to the warmth of the Anemone had grown proportionate to her insecurity, and she hoped that the cold weather would keep the others from wondering why she thrust her hand into her pocket from sunup to sundown. They left the protection of the cave just as the sun paled the morning sky. The storm had blown through quickly, leaving the heavens clear and the sun bright in their eyes as they gradually turned west. The snow, while not deep, had drifted, though a short descent took them out of the snow onto a wet, grassy track. Maywin led them down off of the mountain into a pleasant glade, running with gurgling water as she scouted for a place to ascend the next line of high hills. The Uyumark signals did not torment them that morning, but every snap of a twig set eyes to darting and hands flinching toward weapons. At their midday rest, Maywin returned back along the trail to scout for any sign of their pursuers while the company ate and prepared for another uphill trudge. The Shalane was sitting upon a fallen log, absent-mindedly gnawing on a leathery scrap of dried fruit, when she found Jeff approaching her. The Shalane smiled. A little bit of the energy of his step had returned, no doubt springing from a more confident heart.
"Highness," he bowed. "May I?"
"Please," she said, signalling for him to sit next to her.
"I haven't had the chance to thank you for healing the Throg's bite, so I do so now. Yours, by far, has proved the most useful magic on our adventure."
"You are most welcome, and I am happy to see you better in body and spirit." He grinned.
"Yes, my soul seems to be finding its way back to a bit of the rejoicing it once knew. I think it will not sing as proudly as before, but innocence cannot but give way to wisdom, and I have lost something in this venture that I cannot quite place, but perhaps it will come to me when I have a little more peace and solitude to reflect upon it."
"I feel it too. If you do find words for it, then share them."
"I will, Highness."
"I am also gratified to see that Fenna has lost her temperamental prejudice against you." Jeff sighed, but not altogether unhappily.
"It is a bit strange that she loved Jen for his force of arms, and she only found her love for me when I demonstrated the complete opposite."
The Shalane laughed. "As I recall, it was Jen's devastating injury against the demon that boosted her affections for him. So it is a similar case."
"Then to keep her faithful, I will have to make sure that none of the men in Blackshire attempt anything that might incapacitate them, lest sympathy for their plight spin her affections in another direction."
The Shalane chuckled. "I think our dear Fenner is done spinning. I hope to come visit you when this is over. With you two the Lord and Lady of Blackshire, I cannot imagine there will be a merrier place for a heart ready to forget Throgs, Uyumark, and other unpleasantness."
"You will always be most welcome," Jeff said, now lowering his voice to a whisper. "As will a certain disenfranchised young gentleman. If you come together, we shall throw a party such as you will never forget.
Thank you, the Shalane returned, emotion rising. You are a good man. Do not worry for us. Think on Fenna, treat her well, and you will never want for anything in matters of the heart. I cannot promise you that there will not be future vexations, but I think they will be short in comparison to the last one.
Maywin! Jaren yelled. All eyes followed his voice. Along the swollen stream bank, Maywin sprinted, bloody daggers in her hands.
Get up! She yelled. We must leave!
As they hefted their packs, a single hunter broke from the trees, charging Maywin with frightening speed. If it noticed the rest of the party, it did not acknowledge it, eyes riveted on its prey. Hands fumbled for bows as the Uyumak closed on the half-elf.
It's going to catch her, Jeff said, exclaiming what everyone left unspoken.
Just as the first bows raised to take aim on the creature, Shatan stepped forward, eyes fixed and face serene. The Shalane looked to Aethon, whose eyes had closed as he worked his fortifying magic, saying the spell quietly. Without expression, Shatan concentrated, and just as Maywin turned to face the hunter, it grabbed its throat and fell to the ground, spasming as it struggled to pull air through a clogged airway. Maywin finished it quickly.
Let's move, Shatan commanded, to everyone's surprise. The Dark Guard to the rear. Dayson, stay with the Shalane. Maywin, lead us forward. My guard, to me.
Shocked but silent, the party complied and moved as quickly as they could. Maywin scanning about for a way up and over the next rise. After a brutal, swift climb, sides pinched in pain, and breath came in ragged gasps. Maywin called a halt on a gentle slope shadowed by lofty pines. They leaned against trees and rocks to regain their strength, all ears nervously attuned to the noises around them. Maywin returned down the line to find the Shalane, Aethon leaving Shatan to follow her.
Shalane? Maywin gasped, face pained. I will not be so proud this time.
A gash in her side bled enough to soak her shirt, cloak, and the hand she had used to cover the wound while they walked.
Do you have the strength for it?
Of course.
What happened back there?
Aethon asked the half-elven ranger while the Shalane concentrated.
I found a group of them. Just 3 hunters and a handful of warriors, no more than a scouting party. I killed 2 of the hunters and a couple of the warriors.
I thought you had learned your lesson about attacking Uyumak by yourself after your misadventure with Jen, Aethon remonstrated.
I will keep my own counsel on when to fight and when to withdraw. If Jen were here, they would all be dead, and we could move with more security.
As it is, Aethon said, they know exactly where we are. If you had left them alone, they might be ignorant of our whereabouts. Keep to your books, Patra.
Maywin chastised, face relaxing as the Shalane's magic mended her side.
They had our trail. Without the hunters, they are blind. They will be able to follow us for a time, but I can lose them before nightfall. But I warn you, they are merely pushing us somewhere. We should have had more trouble with them.
Thank you, Shalane.
Maywin returned to the head of the party and started their ascent again, though at a much more relaxed pace.
Can magic turn a coward into a conqueror?
The Shalane asked the nearby Aethon quietly, hoping to avoid the prying ears of Dayson, who followed behind her at a few paces.
No, but it can help one emerge, he answered with equal discretion.
Do you think you're magic enough to see him through his confrontation with Mikik?
The Shalane asked, striving to keep a mocking tone out of her voice.
I know you have little faith in him, Aethon said, but what I do is no different than what any father might do to a young son, facing new dangers and experiences. When I was barely as tall as my father's waist, a neighbouring farmer came into possession of a bull mastiff to help protect his flock against winter wolves. I was terrified of the beast and refused to walk to town to do the little errands my father always sent me on. So one day my father carried me in his arms and, despite my wailing protestations, walked me past the giant dog. Eventually, by which I mean some weeks, I only needed his hand, as the dog rubbed against us and barked. In time, I felt comfortable if he only watched over me. Before the year was out, the mastiff and I became the fondest of friends. So you see, by holding Shatan's hand a little,
By helping him experience success, his confidence may grow so that he can master his fears and start to lead a little. There is little time. I know, but I will try. I thank you for trying to help with your compliment last evening. It helped, whatever his reaction. You may try to talk to him about how he uses his magic. If you don't seem to be manipulating him, he may be more amenable to your conversation. Now I must continue my instruction, if you'll excuse me. Athan returned to his charge, speaking with him intermittently as they hiked. 3 days later they caught their first view of the Dunnock River Canyon from atop a high ridge. From their lofty standpoint, it kinked through the forest, a grey crack that seemed as if a giant had plunged its hands into the valley and ripped it apart. The distant roar of the rocky river and the proximity of familiar, if unpleasantly remembered, places provided a sense of orientation and progress that buoyed them. "By my estimation," Maywan informed them, "we are about 2 days from the meadow where the Uyumak massacred the caravan. We will stay out of view of the canyon and the road on the other side of this ridge, but we must have care now. The bulk of the Uyumak once encamped somewhere near here, and I doubt not that we have just as many before us as behind. I will scout more frequently now, and we must move more cautiously." Cautiously, as Maywan made perfectly plain in the following minutes, meant no talking and required expending some effort not to step on every brittle stick and pine cone that littered the ground in abundance. The Shalane found she had little difficulty doing so, though the rest of her party, Maywan excluded, raised enough of a ruckus to permanently affix a frown on Maywan's face. They stopped early that evening, Maywan informing them that she would scout ahead farther than usual and would not return until near midnight. "Don't attack a camp full of Uyumak, Maywan," Athan cautioned her. "Our survival is more important than any pleasure or revenge you may want to exact." The tracker did not acknowledge his words and ran into the night, leaving her company in a dense, rocky thicket that provided shelter and protection from prying eyes. No one slept or spoke much until she returned. When she did, she said, "It is as I feared. There is a portal a few miles from here, and several companies of Uyumak are nearby. I would guess that the portal is where they resupply and reinforce. They densely patrol a line from the shard's edge to the canyon wall. I suspect that if the rearward element hunting us gets word ahead, we will find ourselves in a thick of the creatures within 2 hours." Hearts sank in unison, a silence ensuing as they all waited for Maywan to proffer some clever way out of the situation.
"What do we do?"
Shatan finally said, voice weak and unsteady.
"You are in command, Herr Ulrich," Maywan returned. "What is your will?"
"My will? My will is to be off of this accursed shard as soon as possible. I suppose that since you're finally asking me for an idea, that you've run out of them. We're all dead, aren't we?"
"Have courage, my lord," Athan soothed. "We have resources yet. Tonight I will place a ward of turning on our camp to keep us safe. It will cost me strength, but that cannot be helped. What we need is time to think about what can be done. The morning light will no doubt lend our minds a bit more clarity than our present worry can permit." But after a night of bitter cold shivering, the dawn only saw them wrenched with worry and agitation. They decided not to make way for fresh panic, conservatively choosing to keep on with the unrelenting, stale panic they had lived with for weeks. Maywan left before full light to scout ahead again, and in the cramped quarters of their stony enclosure, it took a supreme effort from everyone to keep from shouting in annoyance at every bump, discomfort, and misstep. All annoyances quickly passed when the sounds of Uyumak drums reached their ears, though at a distance. Maywan arrived soon after.
"They have grouped and are moving. I expect them soon. Anyone that has a bow and can shoot it with some accuracy, join me on top of the rocks when I give the order. Those with weapons or magic, stay inside the stone circle until I tell you to leave and form a line of defense. If you leave cover too soon, you risk getting cut down by the Uyumak archers. The rest should stay inside the cover of the stones."
The day rose clear and cold, and they stood tensely listening to the rise and fall of the drums. Maywan lay atop one of the rocks, silently surveying the tree-dotted ridge top around them.
I wish they would bloody come,
Jaren grumbled impatiently. But as they waited, the drums gradually faded again until they could not hear them. Longer they waited, and after nearly an hour of hearing nothing but pleasant birdsong and wind, Maywen hopped down and left, returning a while later with a puzzled expression. I don't understand it, but the main body of Uyumark has moved south and east of here. I can't be sure where they are going or why, but it is good fortune for us.
Is the way ahead clear? Aethon asked.
Not entirely, though the defences are much thinner. Their shaman remains at the portal gate, but only about 15 Uyumark, mostly hunters, linger nearby.
We can kill that many, Jaren affirmed, but it won't be easy.
It's not their numbers, I fear, Maywen said. It is their drums. If they are able to signal to their brothers that we are passing through or engaging them, they will chase us and catch us with ease.
Then we wait until the cover of night and try to slip by, Aethon suggested.
You forget, Maywen reminded him, that the Uyumark see well in the dark and smell all the better. We've hardly a better chance of slipping by them now than in the dead of night, though it will improve the odds some.
We need a diversion to pull them in the wrong direction,
Jaren piped in, although whoever does the diverting will likely die for it. Shatan stepped forward and opened his hand, revealing a number of shiny discs.
I've been making these to practice my magic. I believe, Maywen, you said that these attracted them.
Padre Aethon smiled proudly.
Maywen nodded.
That is good. Make as many more as you can. The question is how we can get these into a position where they will start fighting over them without compromising ourselves.
Perhaps I can help, Aethon spoke up after a pause. If I can get close enough to see one of them, I can use my magic to direct it to go wherever we choose.
Maywen could place the discs away from the main body. I could guide an Uyumark there and direct it to return and dump them on the ground. Maywen considered for a few moments.
It is the best we have. But rather than drop them on the ground, have the creature show his companions and then run in another direction away from the portal. For now, rest. We will be travelling through the night.
The Shalane tried to sleep, but she found her busy thoughts and general lack of exhaustion prevented her from doing so. The hours limped slowly by, Shatan creating four more of the shiny, coin-like objects during the day before Aethon insisted that he conserve his strength and rest. Near evening, Maywen left to scout once again, returning just before full dark.
Everyone, follow me and keep as quiet as you can. One loud noise will ruin us all.
No one needed the additional encouragement as they slunk into the night, the bright moons providing just enough light to keep them from committing the gravest of blunders. After nearly 2 hours of slow going, Maywen silently raised her hand to halt the party, waving Padre Aethon forward. The two disappeared into a line of whispering, long-needled pines swaying just ahead of them. Since the Uyumark did not talk or shout, the commencement of the scuffle manifested itself in thumps and the crack of rocks dislodged by hurried feet and the crunch of gravel beneath squirming bodies. Maywen signalled them forward from the edge of the trees, and they jogged forward as the sounds of Uyumark fighting moved slowly away. Padre Aethon stood inconspicuously behind a tree, joining Shatan as they pushed forward into a large clearing. Stumps still remained where the Uyumark had cleared space in the trees. Feces, ashes, and several slashed Uyumark bodies littered the ground as they picked their way between roots determined to trip them. As they neared the opposite edge, a blue light cascaded through the clearing, the stumps casting long shadows. All eyes turned to the source, finding the familiar sheen of a portal some 50 yards to the north.
Hurry, we run, Maywen commanded.
The Shalane picked her way through the difficult tangle of roots and detritus with surprising ease, leaving her companions and guards behind and finding herself second after Maywen to enter the relative safety of the tree line on the other side.
You run well, Maywen complimented her. Those stones are more beneficial than I thought.
As the rest of the party straggled forward, the first shadowy silhouettes appeared in the portal. Only Maywen's restraining hand kept the Shalane from darting out to help her mother.
As soon as they all managed to get inside the dark of the trees, they spent several moments catching their breath and watching what would unfold behind them. The portal only remained open for a few minutes before it winked out.
"I count a full company of Uyumak," Maywin reported. "Walk away into the wood quietly. If they pick up our scent, we may have a fight yet."
But before they turned to go, the Chukka thumped to his subordinates and the Uyumak company dashed away in the direction the Shalane's party had come from.
"What could possibly have been so important that finding us became the second priority?"
Maywin mused out loud.
"Well, let us use our good fortune to our advantage. Stick together. Getting lost in a forest during the day is easy. At night, it is nearly unavoidable."